Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. This week, I'm introducing you to Julia Marie, and she's actually had quite an interesting life. Julia describes herself as just like you, just like me, just like all of us. She had a plan for her life, and she was willing to go the distance. She was a translator in the men's shirt department of an upscale store in Wiesbaden, Germany, and she was 18 years old. She had other non-traditional jobs like driving heavy equipment in the fields of California, and she was an airman. Her job was to fix big airplanes. But you know how we have these plans for our lives, these ideas of what we think life is going to look like? Well, for Julia Marie, it all kind of turned on its head. About 30 years ago, she had what is now called a spiritually transformative experience that unfolded over multiple months. And while she did not understand what was going on at first, and has kind of taken the following years to unpack it and understand it, she really has become this person who is here to help other people heal, to help other people understand their lives, and to help us transition, and to help all of us as human beings understand where humanity is heading. On her website, she says, we can choose the safe, we can choose the familiar, we can choose the known, or we can follow the whisper of our soul's longing. Julia chose to listen to the voice within, and she let go of the safety and security of the material world, and she has never once looked back. So now, here's my very next interview with Julia Marie.
And he said that when I put my hands on his back, the pain that he'd been in all day with the migraine instantly went away. That's why he wanted another appointment. And then he said, over the next few weeks, he started feeling so much better. He went to the doctor and asked the doctor to take x-rays because he was able to walk and not no more pain in his back. And so the doctor took x-rays, looked at the x-rays, and sent him back down for another set. And then Ray came back with the second set of x-rays, and that's when the doctor said, Ray, what have you been doing? There's no earthly way your spine should be regenerated.
How do you self-describe?
I say I am a loyal friend, a faithful servant, and a curious seeker. That's what I would say about myself.
I love that. And I love the seeker part because, you know, I think curiosity is a superpower. And I feel like we need more seekers in the world. We need more people curious about the world and about everything in it, including other human beings. Were you like that as a kid, or was that something that kind of evolved over time?
I'd say it's something that evolved over time. As a child, I was pretty introverted, and I was one of those kids that had the imaginary friends and all of that stuff. So I would say the curiosity probably came after the awakening part of my life. So that I would say mid-30s. Then I became a seeker.
And you know, I've read a little bit of your book, and thanks so much for sending it to me. I'm halfway through. It's really fabulous. Can you tell me, was there an event that happened when you were in your 30s that kind of changed your mind about reality or set you off on this quest to discover more about the world?
Well, I would say I pretty much traveled the physical world growing up as a child because I was a military brat. So I would say that I was set on a path of discovery of the greater world that exists beyond the mere physical world is what happened to me in my mid-30s. I went from scared of what was happening to me to trusting that what was happening to me was actually something that was real and not a figment of my imagination.
I have to say, I wonder, have you ever looked up the Wikipedia entry, Third Culture Kids? It's about kids that grow up in cultures other than their own. And then they come back to the culture, you know, that they were returning to, I guess, and just how it shaped them. It's actually quite fascinating, the psychological studies they did on kids who grew up overseas. Because I lived in, I grew up in Guyana, and then I grew up in Lahore, Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that it changed my entire life. And I had no idea there was a whole area of study around children who grow up in cultures other than their own. It's actually quite fascinating. And I would suspect that your growing up in all these different places changed you forever.
Well, I remember being 18 years old, coming back to the United States. We went from Germany to California. In Europe, they have a very good public transportation system. Buses can take you anywhere pretty quickly. Cars, train, you don't need to have your own car. There's the train system or the bus system. And so when I came back to the United States, the first person I went up to and asked, well, so like, where's the bus stops and the train station? They looked at me like, don't you have a car? I mean, I didn't have a license till I was over 18. So it was, coming back to the United States was a culture shock for me. It's very different here.
Absolutely. Do you feel comfortable speaking more about that? You know, your life in Germany versus your life in the U.S.?
We started out living actually in a small village. We didn't have military housing yet. So I went from a place where everybody spoke the same language as me to a place where very few people could understand what I was saying. So the first thing I had to do was adapt and learn their language. If I wanted to play with the children, I needed to be able to speak their language. So I very quickly learned to speak German fluently and became good enough at it that people thought I was a native-born German and not an American citizen. In a small village, you know, they do things like they slaughter their own animals and they have a little bakery and they have tiny stores that are specialized. So you go with your little bag and get your bread from the bakery and your meat from the meat place. That's not how it is here. It's all crammed in one big place and a big store. So the way you sweep the streets, everybody swept the streets in front of their house halfway to the middle of the street and their whole front of their house every Saturday, because on Sunday, everyone in the village dressed up and went spaziergang. You would go for a walk through the village on Sunday. We don't have things like that here. So it's very different. And I feel like if more people were able to have even just a taste of some other country than the one they are raised in, it would change their worldview. And many things are still the same. Parents still love their children. Kids still have pets, dogs. I mean, we still fight and tussle. So there are many things that are the same. So we're all part of the same human family, but how we experience the world is very different.
The second question I always ask is, did you grow up in a religious household? Was that a big part of your life as a kid?
Oh, yes. I grew up in a Catholic household, very Catholic. Every Sunday, we dress up and two by two march to church. So my mother was the religious one, but my father also participated. And the challenge with me with all of that was when I had a few experiences like seeing a spontaneous past life of myself. I didn't know what that was. And hearing the music of the spheres or the sound of creation, whatever you want to call it. I didn't have anybody I could talk to about that because that's not normal. And it's not something that's condoned in the Catholic Church. It's you have a priest that talks to God and you can't talk to God directly. And that always bothered me as a child. I remember wondering why I had to go into a little box and talk to a man in a black cassock about my sins when I didn't understand that. So I didn't stay religious my entire life. As soon as I was able to not go to church anymore, I didn't. Yeah.
Absolutely. I do think that's one of the problems I had just in general, because I wanted a more direct experience of that energy mm-hmm. of the divine. I wanted something that was more intimate, more mine, you know, more where I felt heard intimately, where I was in conversation and communion. And in, you know, churches, I do feel like there's always the implied suggestion that the priest, the pastor, the reverend, they're the one who's the conduit.
Yep.
You cannot directly access the divine. But honestly, it's actually quite fascinating. The more I talk to people just in my day-to-day life, and I mean, I was in my hairdresser's chair who I don't know very well. And I just said, oh, my podcast this week is about someone who sees spirits, you know, and their experiences with that. And she said, oh, well, I mean, I see them all the time. And I was like, what? I mean, what are you doing? Wait, I'm sorry, what? And she's like, yeah, my mom sees them too. And I said, it must be generational. And she said, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not a big deal for her because she just sees them and it's, you know, she doesn't approach them. She doesn't have conversations, but it's part of her reality. She just doesn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So I thought to myself, my goodness, how many people in the world walking around and not talking about these experiences they're having, these, you know, what people would call supranormal events, even though they're actually probably normal, we just haven't created the language yet or the concept yet that they're normal and not talking about it. I find it utterly fascinating.
Well, we're hiding in plain sight everywhere. I mean, until I wrote my book, not a lot of people, just a few people that were drawn to my classes and stuff knew the extent of my experience because I really didn't talk about it publicly. I didn't feel the need to, but now I understand it's important because there's an awakening happening that the more people understand this is kind of how it works. It's not something you're not going crazy. It's not unusual. It really is okay. It's just you waking up to more of who you are naturally. So, you know, she grew up in a household where it was okay. So that was fostered in her. So she got lucky. Many of us don't.
You know, the Catholic Church, I did attend for a while. I never officially joined the Catholic Church, but they had this incredible cathedral in Portland, Oregon that was very old and art deco, and it was just architecturally so exquisite. And the paintings, and I just, you know, I had more of a relationship with Mother Mary, frankly, than anyone else. And mm-hmm. it just comforted me to go there and just look at her, you know, and just feel held and kind of during the service, contemplate that image and what it meant. Cause I love art. I love beauty. I love architecture. And so when all those things come together, I'm just kind of mesmerized and I can't stop. They also had this Jesuit priest who I'm a big fan of the Jesuits because they're more of a cerebral order. Mm-hmm. And I'm a person who loves science and discovery. And besides for, you know, going to seminary and get my master's of divinity, I love science. I've loved it ever since I was a kid. And so he would bring in all sorts of fascinating and scientific items into his sermons. And so every time he was going to lead the service, I thought, hashtag winning. I'm so excited because I knew I was going to learn something. And I love that kind of idea of marrying science and religion. You know, I feel like there are these two disparate kind of modalities, but they're sort of in some places saying the same thing. It's just how do you get them to have a conversation with each other? Do you feel that way?
Well, if we look at what's happening in the world of science, science has finally evolved to a place where it can begin to give an explanation for a lot of the quote unquote metaphysical things. You know, quantum physics saved every spiritual person's life. Okay. It's like before then it was kind of difficult, but let's be real. It that explains rationally much of the phenomena that occurs that we haven't been able to explain before.
And I have to say, I appreciate that you used air quotes around rationally. Mm-hmm. That was the best part. But you're right. You know, those of us who have these experiences that are kind of unbelievable or unreal, it's like this quantum physics and the ideas that are and theories that are emerging out of it are kind of a first step in a direction where maybe we can have a more holistic idea. And instead of, you know, saying that people who experience things that are different or what we consider to be strange, instead of considering them as outliers or people who need to be avoided, we can say, oh, as this knowledge, as quantum physics, as this science progresses, these people are really keyed into something that's happening that the rest of us kind of can only guess at or maybe wish for. And I, you know, of course, reading your book, it's super exciting because you've had so many experiences that people would consider super normal. And I would love to just hear, were you scared when these things started happening? Was it frightening? Did it throw you off balance?
I would say yes, but I want to say something to what you just said before I move on. I feel like that in our ancient past, we were way more connected to that side of our being than we are now. And I believe my own personal self, that the more technologically advanced we became when the industrial stuff started and we moved away from being connected to the earth and then living according to the natural rhythms, we lost our connection. So we were more normal then than we are now. How we exist with our limit, with our attention span so shortened and our focus so narrow, we have stolen our own divinity from ourselves. We've locked ourselves out of it. So I just wanted to make that observation.
You're totally right on because, you know, even I get into this, my attention span is very... Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see it happening over time and it really bothers me. I don't feel like I'm grounded anymore. I don't feel like I'm connected to anything. So I just wanted to affirm what you were saying and agree with you.
Well, that's why God made trees. Go outside without your technology and sit underneath your favorite tree and do nothing but look around. That'll connect you. Seriously, it's the best therapy ever. You asked me if I was frightened. And yes, when I wrote about my awakening in the book, I did my best to recreate what it felt like for me at that time, to have all of what was happening to me happening. And frankly, I was confused because I was having physical things happening to my body, like the round red circles appearing where the chakras were and the heat and the fire and the healing energy turning on. I didn't know what it was. And so I was having my awakening included a physical, I want to say, upgrade of some sort in that 18 months. And then with the upgrade came the ability to perceive some invisible people that showed up in my living room and started teaching me things that I later found the principles that are listed in the book came to me directly from these teachers in my living room. And it wasn't until later reading books that I discovered that they were, oh, these are perennial wisdoms that are in all the wisdom traditions across the world. But I got them direct from these beings in my living room through question and answer, basically, with them over a period of 18 months. And so I started to get really concerned. So I asked God for a sign. Now, keep in mind, at this time, I was still calling the universe God because I was heavily I was raised Christian, Catholic. And when I asked God for a sign, the whole story's in the book, but basically the response was a three-part rainbow over my, directly over my house the very next morning after I prayed for a sign. I said, if this is real, if this is you and not me going crazy, I need a sign. I know you're busy, but if you wouldn't mind, could you please drop me a sign that I know is mine? And I took my daughter to school, noticed the rainbow on the way home, thought, oh, that's a pretty rainbow, was going in the house, and I heard very clearly, go get your sister. She lived across the street. So I went across the street to my sister and said, I'm supposed to show you this rainbow. I think this is for you. And she looked at it, looked at me, and she started to cry, and she goes, that rainbow's for you. And I said, how do you know? And she said, look at it. And it was a rainbow that was split in three parts that was a physical representation of one of the concepts that I was working with, that with the invisible teachers. So I put the physical sign that matched the concept that I was working on, the principle that I was working on, right over my house the very next morning. So it was specific and synchronistic in the timing. And from that day to this, I've not doubted that what I'm connected to is my own myself, my greater self, in all of its aspects, including the source from which we all come.
And I think I just have a few things to say. You know, no matter how you talk about this energy, you know, whether it's energy or spirit or angels or what have you, it's all the same thing. We just use different terminology. And that's just for my listeners so that none of them feel bad about how they relate. But I think it's also important to understand, and your book illustrates it beautifully, that these messages and these kind of concepts that were shown you, they can come in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. They can, or awakenings can come in so many different ways. Yes. It can come in a dream, or it can come in a vision, or it can come in marks on your body. I'll never forget when I was living in Portland, and I used to have dreams every once in a while that were just so profound. They broke my mind practically. And in the dream, my left hand, this figure was standing over it and inserting these gorgeous jeweled emeralds into each joint. So on my palm, on my knuckles, and in my wrist. And the feeling was so visceral and so intense. I woke up and my hand was throbbing. And to this day, I don't know why I have emeralds in my hand, but I do apparently for some reason. But I thought, you know, that was it was so tangible to me. And I could feel the process that mm-hmm. I knew when I woke up that next morning that something had irrevocably changed for me. The other thing is, we can also remember that these energies want to co-create with us. And a simple, just demonstration is, I had to drive to Santa Fe a few weeks ago. And before I drove, you know, a month before I was going to leave, I started asking the spirits, hey, safe journey, no blizzards, no tornadoes. Who knows what's going on with the weather? Safe journey. And, you know, I drove, it was safe journey. But on that second day, my mom called me in the morning and was really worried and freaking out because they were calling for tornadoes right where I was driving through. And I just felt the feeling, get up and go now. And mm-hmm. the whole day when I drove between storms. Mm-hmm. It was astonishing. I was watching on my radar app, you know, where it showed the really crazy winds and everything. And I literally skated. I just watched the highway go right through all these storms that were rolling through. I made it in the right time. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, if it's out there, they're out there. They want to help you in so many different ways, from the mundane to the magnificent. And you just have to start a conversation and say, hey, I'd really appreciate safe travel. Please, please, I'm praying for safe travel when I go to Santa Fe. And they will do their best to make it right with you.
Well, I say the universe is interactive and also responsive. So understanding that when you put something out to the field, you're going to get a response back. And the level of awareness with which you put the request out is going to determine the quality of the response back. So as long as we aren't coming from a place of fear, we're going to get some quality responses from the field.
Something funny that I think you'll appreciate about, you know, asking the universe for things. I think you'll find this hilarious. So I was driving, I moved back to Illinois in October to take care of my mother. And unexpectedly, my stepfather passed away 2 weeks after I got home. But the whole way home, I was praying and meditating while I was driving from Santa Fe for reconciliation. And that was the word that I held in my heart, my hands, reconciliation. Because my mother had had a falling out with my stepfather's family that was pretty acrimonious and had divided the family kind of catastrophically a few years ago. So much so that when my stepfather was passing away, you know, it was really tense and the relationship was still frayed. But I just kept it in my heart and mind, reconciliation, reconciliation. I want that for my mom and my stepfather's family, because that's going to heal a whole lot of people. And so, you know, as this goes on and my stepfather goes in the hospital and as he's dying, that begins to happen. And so now those relationships are actually healing and it's really, really beautiful. But I thought to myself, you know, the doorbell rang one day. I'd been there like 3 or 4 weeks or maybe a month. And I opened the door and there was a friend who I hadn't talked to in 30 years, who was a best friend forever. When I was a kid, we have so many memories playing soccer, so much. There's just so much there. We fell out about 25 to 30 years ago. She's sitting on the stoop. Her jaw drops. She says, "What are you doing here?" And I thought, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "I'm here to see your mom because everybody stops by to see my mother." And she said, literally, the second thing she said was, "Why did you stop talking to me 25 years ago?" And so we went through that whole conversation and now we're back in contact. We're talking all the time. We're in relationship, but it's all to say like those energies, those big energies, when you put them out there, you don't know what they're going to splash onto or what they're going to affect.
Well, exactly. You asked for reconciliation. I was doing a lot of mundane readings. I enjoy doing readings for people that are looking for, you know, what's my life about? What's my next move as far as my, you know, service or those kinds of things. I don't enjoy answering questions about when am I going to meet my next boyfriend. I don't like those. You'll meet them when you get done clearing whatever it is you need to clear that's blocking you from meeting that person. And most people don't want to hear that. So I was getting tired of doing those kind of readings. So I ask spirit. I asked the universe, I'd like to do more healing, because I started out as an energy healer because of what happened in the beginning for me. That's how I started being of service. And over the years, it kind of evolved into the readings and the healing kind of went to the side. And I felt like I was doing more good as a healer than I was necessarily as a consultant. And the universe's response to me was to start sending me people who would come and sit at my table and ask me to talk to their crossed over loved ones. Well, I don't have medium on my literature anywhere, not at the time. And frankly, I ran from it for almost a decade. I would say, no, I don't do that. Go see so-and-so over there or go, no, sorry. And then one day I finally said, well, they keep showing up. I told the people that sat down in front of me, let me try. And so I tried and I made a successful connection and don't know how I did it. And there were three couples in a row that asked to hear from their loved ones that day. That story is also in the book. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this kind of work, I felt a huge responsibility with communicating on the behalf of someone who wasn't here anymore. I wanted to make sure that I had their person. So I thought, well, I need some training. So I actually went and got formal training in how the process works and all of that kind of stuff from a few of the best in the world. So I don't mind doing it now, but my response to I'd like to do more healing was mediumship. And the first time I did that with this older woman, her daughter, and the husband's the one who showed up. At the end of the exchange with him, she looked at me and said, "Thank you, dear. I've waited a long time to hear those words," because he basically apologized. And then I looked at the spirit and could see him getting some light around him. And that's when I realized, oh, this is healing. This is a form of healing, not only for the person who's receiving the message, but for the person who's finally getting the chance to say whatever it was didn't get said, or complete whatever didn't get completed when they were here. So, yeah, be careful what you ask for, I guess, or maybe just know that the universe is going to give you what you need.
One of my favorite movies, Practical Magic, which I saw in the theater when it came out eons ago. I wrote it down when I lived in Portland on a blackboard in my office: be careful what you wish for. And for some reason that just struck me so powerfully, because I thought, if you're not careful, you'll get something that's not expected or something that throws you for a loop. So I'm always really conscious about the verbiage I use and like the intention and the heartfeltness that I put into things. Cause I was not expecting reconciliation with my dear friend. I'm so grateful it's happening. But I thought to myself, oh, spirits and universe, you are funny. You have a sense of humor. And I needed this. So thank you.
But I feel like perhaps that opportunity was waiting. And all that was needed was for you to make some kind of request that would approximate the healing of that relationship. So, okay, she asked for reconciliation and she didn't specify with her mom. So let's just give her some reconciliation. Yeah.
You know, some days I don't want to get out of bed, but also it does make the world a little bit more thrilling, this universe a little bit more thrilling, if you think about it as co-creative and in relationship and in relatedness and wanting to build things, create things, create goodness in the world. Because I'm always talking about how, you know, sometimes people are like, why are you, oh my God, you're so lucky, you're so creative and you do these things. And I always say, look, I'm here just like everybody else to help everyone else. Yeah. These are just the gifts that I was given. And my job is to use them to lift other people up or lift the environment up or lift this world up in whatever small, tiny way that I can do it. That's it. And so I think it's really important for people to understand and encompass their gifts, kind of develop them to their best ability so that they can go out. And I always say, make the world a shinier place. Mm-hmm. Well, the main thrust of my podcast is I ask every guest, have you ever, I mean, this is such a ridiculous question with you because I'm like, of course she's had 10,000 of these, but have you ever experienced something that was magical or miraculous? You know, something inexplicable. It can be more than one thing. You've already shared something that you'd like to share with my guests, any event in your life that stands out as particularly beautiful or powerful for you.
When I was first awakened and my guidance was to sell my house and my law practice and only work for the voice that I was hearing, I'll admit, I said, okay, God, if this is what you want me to do with my life, and at the time it was primarily with the healing work, I said, well, if you wouldn't mind, sometime in this period, I would like to be made aware of a miracle level healing that was delivered through me to someone. So I put that out to the universe and let it go. And it was maybe 15 or 20 years later in Harrison, Arkansas, when I had an experience with a man who had really bad back trouble. He couldn't stand up straight. He couldn't even lift a cup of coffee without pain. And, you know, again, long story short, it's one of the ones that's in the book. I, at a gathering, had the opportunity to ask him. His name was Ray. I said, Ray, can I put my hands on you? I said, before I do, I want to let you know that Jesus is my man, because I could tell this was one of those, I was in the Bible Belt, so pretty safe to assume that he was probably on the Jesus train. Okay. So I said, Jesus is my man. And so I just want you to know that that's the place that I work from when I'm working with that kind of intent. And so 10 minutes, I put my hands on his back. They got hot as fire. I made a sound into his back because that's what I was guided to do. And then went to leave. And he, as soon as I was finished with him, we were in a gathering. There were other people there. It was a gathering of healers. He jumped up and went out, and somebody else went out after him. And then it was like, okay, we're done. We're closing up the gathering now. I went to leave, and he kind of is standing in front of me, and I'm trying to go around him. You know how you kind of dance in the door? And he said, I want to make another appointment. I want to make another appointment with you. I said, well, I'm leaving town for like six weeks. I'll call you when I get back. And according to him later, I guess that night, God came to him and said, why do you need to make another appointment? I sent you your deliverer. Why don't you just accept your miracle? And so he said, okay. Now, I didn't learn this until like about 2 months after this experience. And so I'm back off the road in my house thinking, oh, I got to call that Ray guy, because I remember he wanted another appointment. And seriously, knock, 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 knock. And I went to the door, and there he's standing there. And I'm looking, okay, why are you here? And I look out, and there's his pickup truck with a trailer that has a riding lawnmower on it. Because Ray was the kind of a guy that would go mow the old lady's lawn or bring people food. He was always trying to do kind things for his neighbors, okay? That's just who he was. And he said, well, I just came to thank you for my healing. And then he started, and I kind of zoned out. But then he started talking about what happened. And I said, what did you say? And then I dragged him in the house and put a tape in my tape recorder. That's how long ago this was. And said, would you mind repeating that? So somewhere I have a tape of his story. And he said that when I put my hands on his back, the pain that he'd been in all day with the migraine instantly went away. That's why he wanted another appointment. And I thought, well, that was a blessing that he got, you know, that his pain went away. And then he said, over the next few weeks, he started feeling so much better. He went to the doctor and asked the doctor to take x-rays because he was able to walk and not no more pain in his back. And so the doctor took x-rays, looked at the x-rays, and sent him back down for another set. And then Ray came back with the second set of x-rays. And that's when the doctor said, Ray, what have you been doing? There's no earthly way your spine should be regenerated. The lower three discs of his back, the lower three vertebrae, were he was in line for the surgery with the rods and all of that stuff. And he really didn't want it. And so 10 minutes of energy flow to him. Him accepting the miracle from God, because I didn't, I'm just the delivery system. I didn't do the healing. And I always make that clear to people. I'd rather call myself a facilitator. I use healer in my literature just because that's what people understand, but I'm a facilitator. And that's how I see my part in the process. And so he basically said, you know, the doctor said something miraculous was happening. And shortly after the visit to the doctor, Ray got really sick. Now, Ray was a smoker. So like there was a period of time where he would go to sleep at night and like his sheets would be black. And I feel like it was the body flushing the toxins out. And the doctor made house calls to get him through whatever this flu-like thing was. I believe it was a healing crisis, but I wasn't there to tell him, and he wasn't, you know, he didn't have my phone number to call me. So he went through that process all on his own, but eventually he came out the other side and, as far as I know, lived a happy, healthy life. And for the rest of the time I lived in his town, Ray would try and drag people to me, and I tried to tell him, look, you can't force somebody to accept. They have to want it. I can't That's not for me to do. But he tried anyway, bless his heart. I say that in a good Southern way, because he just wanted other people to experience what he'd experienced. And somewhere in that hospital are X-ray. There are actual records that show a degenerated spine and then a regenerated spine. And to me, that was my miracle that I'd asked for. I asked for a genuine miracle that somehow was proven. And that's what Spirit gave me.
There's several things that I love about your story. One is the idea that we can ask for these things, but they come in the time that they're allotted. It doesn't mean it's going to happen in 5 minutes or even tomorrow or in a month. It's going to come in the time that it's supposed to come. So, you know, us in our technology-driven world expecting instant results, that's not how this works. The other thing I think that's really important to say, and I'm so grateful that you brought it up, is about the healing crisis. And, you know, it's not as if you did this work with Ray and instantly, oh my gosh, he's skipping around the room. He's doing jumping jacks. There is, you know, there's a longer process for some people that unfolds over time, because something that's so ingrained or so just in the body like that, deeply in the body, it takes time. And the body has multiple layers to shed. And so would you mind speaking about what a healing crisis is and what it kind of can look like, I guess?
Well, I would say in general, I say anybody that gets any energy work done, know that you're shifting the vibration of your vehicle is what's happening. And so it's going to respond some kind of way. And it may need to release something, or it seeks equilibrium. It's going to want to try and balance itself out. So what people call healing crises is actually the body just trying to adjust to the rearrangement of the frequencies in the vehicle itself. So I always say, be gentle with yourself. Don't freak out. And for Ray, it was really extreme, because I believe the level of the healing that he got, I mean, his body regenerated bone.
And I think also, and you can disagree with me, of course, that the other thing that's really fascinating and I think really important for any healing to get done is the person receiving has to be open to it, but also really intentional about desiring it and wanting that healing to happen.
Well, again, we got to be careful what we ask for, because if I say, please give me a healing, does that mean I may be intending I want a physical healing, but what I get is a spiritual one? So let's just be clear. Somebody may come to me for a physical healing, but the type of healing they receive is not a physical one. I always say I'm the conduit. I'm delivering the energy to you that whatever it is your soul is asked to receive, to work with in whatever way it feels is appropriate. I never send any kind of healing to anybody who hasn't asked me for it. I don't feel like that's appropriate. So the universe doesn't respond unless we talk to it, unless we ask for it. So we have to always remember to ask. And in the same way, I believe, well, if the universe isn't going to do stuff for me without me asking, I'm not going to do stuff for people without them asking me.
Absolutely. And what I really love about what you just said is that you brought us full circle back to be careful what you wish for. Words to live by.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, everyone, I hope you enjoyed this wonderful interview with Julia Marie, and there will be a link to her book, Signals from My Soul, A Spiritual Memoir of Awakening, which I did read and I could not put down.
Well, there will be a link in the episode's show notes. As well, there will be a link to her website so you can do a deeper dive on just who this human is and the work she's doing in the world. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and thank you each and every one of you who have left ratings or written a little review. Those ratings and reviews help other people find this little work of mine. If you haven't yet done so, please do consider hitting 5 stars, because what else is this podcast worth except 5 stars wherever you find the podcast? Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Julia Marie. Be brave in the face of change. Embrace the change, knowing that it's another adventure that you are being asked to undertake. It's another invitation to co-create and participate in this wild universe that we live in. So be like Julia Marie, be brave and embrace the adventure. And I'm pretty sure that one day you will look at where you're at and you'll look at how far you have come, and you will just fall more and more in love with life and what is unfolding every single day around each and every one of us.